We are live in Chattanooga, Tennessee today. And whenever I come to Chattanooga, where I learned how to actually say Chattanooga, it isn't Chattanooga, it's Chattanooga. And I learned how to say that here in the beautiful city of Chattanooga with my friend John Holland, who we usually get together a couple of times every few years, and we sit here in Mobile Podcast Command to do a podcast. So welcome, John Holland.
It's great to be here.
Esteemed author and analyst. And he's going to be with us here in the podcast for podcast 841, doing the Backroads Tour. And now I'm working my way up through the Mid-South, so we're in eastern Tennessee, going to head on through Nashville and on up to a little corner of Arkansas into Missouri and up through the Ozarks on up through Iowa, where I intend to castigate Iowans for their craven pursuit of politicians. We'll talk about that in a future podcast. So, there is a, I don't know if you're aware of this, John, because you are, as you know, an esteemed author and analyst. I'm a little surprised that there isn't more knowledge of the payment processing revolution that's going on in this country. And I have a client, ReliaFund at ReliaFund.com. I love ReliaFund. And you know why?
Why do you love ReliaFund, Bob? Why?
I love them because they integrate their systems with your systems. A lot of payment processors, you've got to use their interface. There's no real integration. It's really a problem to do it. That is not the way ReliaFund works, especially if you have a developed business, so you have your back office accounting systems and everything else. ReliaFund gets in there and works with your systems rather than forcing you into their systems. And that requires, you know, a sense of development and an effort to come up with payment processing solutions, and they've been doing integrated solutions, that's what that is, for 20 years. So if you're developing an e-commerce site, if you are developing new back office stuff, for instance, if you use QuickBooks, they can set you up with a pay now invoice that you can send out. They click on pay now, it takes you to your interface, but it's actually ReliaFund. No long-term contracts. They're secure and technology focused. You can call them at 866-243-5040. If you do, you will speak to a human being, which is always useful, Kevin Hill or Greg Lowry.
What's that number again, Bob?
866-243-5040, or check them out online at ReliaFund.com, R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D, ReliaFund.com. That's how I found them, with by going to their website.
And the other thing is, if I made a donation to the Bob Davis podcast, would it go through ReliaFund?
If you decided to do it with a check, yes, it would, because I'm just set up so that I can have clients pay with check, because a lot of times they don't want to use a credit card, so I have ReliaFund to have them pay with checks. But if you were
your back office management team can process that through.
Goes right into my account.
Perfect.
Which is lovely.
That's amazing.
Lovely. And the difference between that and something like PayPal is, if you give me a donation through PayPal, which I will heartily accept, and that, of course, is the next subject, then it goes into my PayPal, and I have to use the PayPal card for that. The ReliaFund interface, you can use the check numbers, and it goes directly into my bank account, and then I have it. So that's really exciting. And yes, I do request and am very happy with donations I've been getting from all of you people. I will do a whole podcast with the list, so, you know, cool your jets, because I want to make sure I thank everyone, because that is going right into the tank of Mobile Podcast Command. Very, very welcome and very happy to have those donations as I, you know, tour the back roads. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, Spreaker.com, and on Spotify with the Obamas, by the way. They are going to have a podcast on Spotify, and I'll be joining them, you know, on Spotify with my podcast. So I'm pretty excited about it.
That's some heavy company there.
Yeah.
So that's great.
By the way, Tuned In works with Alexa, and the Google Play works with the Google device, which I don't even remember what they call that, because I don't have one and I won't have one. But if you have one, you've gone to the dark side. So, you know, if you have one, well, then this is how you get my podcast. You can listen to while you're going to hell.
Just out of curiosity, while I'm going to hell, so if I ask Alexa to play the Bob Davis podcast, will she do that?
She will. Absolutely.
Man, I love her more than I ever have before.
You know, she's pretty hot compared to Siri. I have to say, and I'm not a fan of Siri's either, but Alexa gets down. So, anyway, that sounds awfully 1960. So, here's the story, the backstory from podcast 841. This is really take two, because we recorded an entire podcast.
And it was brilliant.
It was fantastic. And it's too bad that you missed it because it's gone forever because I threw it away. But I had not set up the external microphones on the system. So guess what? We were recording on the internal mic of the computer and not on the microphones. And so this is a whole different thing. So yes, you will be able to hear my little tiny fan in the background because it's pretty hot here in eastern Tennessee at this time of the year. All the doors in Mobile Podcast Command are open. We're on a side street here where your condo is, John. You live in style, being an analyst and author and a well-known commentator. So what do I guess I should start with where we started with. We had a very long conversation today. We've taken at least two tours today of Chattanooga and surroundings, and we had a long conversation about the public-private partnerships that have existed in Chattanooga for a long time that have transformed the city. So what we didn't do when I started that conversation is you told me today that before the Depression, Chattanooga was quite the industrial center, and what did you say, the fourth or first largest producer of automobiles?
Fourth largest producer of automobiles in America. Most of those nameplates are gone now just due to, well, the Great Depression. It was also big into steel, large foundry here that was part of the town. And in 1969, CBS declared it as the dirtiest city in America.
Which kind of surprises me, because Pittsburgh was pretty dirty, and your dad worked in Pittsburgh and remembers the day when a man who worked in an office in Pittsburgh had to take two shirts, because by the time noon rolled around, your shirt would be dirty with coal dust. True story.
True story. Absolutely true story. And apparently Chattanooga was dirtier. Mm-hmm. I was not there then. But at this point in time, I mean, it's obviously, steel went away. Automotive went away after the Great Depression. And it's one of the cleanest cities in America. And because
today.
It's in today, and because it's in a valley, it's tough to keep the air quality up. I mean, like the L.A. Basin or any other place, it's a thing of pride that we've got around here to be a fairly clean city. So.
Well, that's very nice. But what I really wanted to talk about, and what I am shocked about, is the support for what I would call American socialism. This is the wedding of private and public enterprise, controlled by the state, controlled by the local city and the regions, to do all these wonderful things, like the aquarium. And you'll have to give me a whole list of the things. And you know what? They are very nice, but this is supposed to be... This is Tennessee. This is supposed to be the rough-hewn, pioneering,
independent people.
Davy Crockett kind of place.
Exactly.
Right?
But anyway, it has transformed the city, and they've done an excellent job of it, and it's been beneficial to the entire community and to the entire state. The increased tax revenue, the increased property values, the River City Company has made this town in the last 20 years into a pretty much world-class place to live, visit, and play.
We talked
sounding
about,
like the Chamber of Commerce.
Well, you do. It does sound propaganda-ish, but the thing is, we talked about when both of us used to come through here as kids, usually on trips to Florida. You were going to North Carolina, we were going down to Florida, and these were very backward. I remember we went to Lookout Mountain, but I don't recall ever going into Chattanooga. We just skipped it, and it had a funny name, and that was the name of the train, the Chattanooga Choo Choo, etc. But we skipped Knoxville and skipped Chattanooga because they weren't necessarily places you wanted to drive through. And I remember some of those trips driving through roads that went through the towns, and they weren't good. It is a complete transformation. The other thing is, these cities, we talked about Nashville a little bit in the podcast we threw away, but we'll talk about it now. These are now cosmopolitan cities. These aren't backward towns anymore. This state is growing rapidly. I know Nashville is a major city. Chattanooga is becoming a major city. And I was shocked at Knoxville, even, which is actually a pretty big city.
A lot of people forget that the World's Fair was hosted in Knoxville in 1984.
Really?
And it's,
you are just like the Chamber of Commerce.
I am, well, for East Tennessee. I mean, Knoxville. And as a wild-eyed libertarian, I frankly, the concept of public-private partnership is one of those things that's not so much. But when you look at the things it's done, I mean, I'm no fan of Franklin Roosevelt, but the TVA project transformed East Tennessee into a powerhouse of industry and a fairly clean industry. We've got 12 or 15 dams that were built during that time that provide clean hydropower. They've also do nuclear. They're into solar and wind, of course, like everybody is in this day and time.
Well, but my understanding is the TVA was a controversial suggested project for quite some time and simply came to the floor when Roosevelt was president.
Exactly.
He supported it, but he didn't think of it necessarily.
No, it wasn't necessarily his thought, but it's like a lot of things that are major projects that are built that maybe partly government, but it's now run as an independent sort of.
But this is a Republican state. This is a state of individualism and rugged separatism. Basically, what's going on here?
I suspect the
and
general,
Bob Corker was the guy that did it. Who was a former senator.
He was head of River City. He was mayor of Chattanooga first, and head of River City Properties.
Which is the overall agency that controls
sort
all
of this. that did the public private thing.
Is this a council
thing.
Or is this literally an organization that somebody runs?
Quite frankly, I think it's kind of like Skull and Bones. there's not a lot of people that know the members of this team. They show up occasionally at city council if the city's involved in zoning changes or any of the rest of it. But if they want to build a river walk, they build a river walk, and permits are magically applied, and occasionally land is taken. So it's one of those things. If they think it benefits the community, it does, and nobody talks about it as a socialist product, but it is. And I mean,
this is certainly not the only city. Now, you did mention earlier today, because I brought up Nashville, and you said they don't do it this way. They have a different approach.
Nashville has a much more capitalistic city, as we say, because frankly, there's been a lot of money, and the music industry's done a lot of it, that have put into Nashville that it is self-sustaining. I'm sure there's some minor public-private things going on that we don't know about, but basically, they've got a much stronger city council, they've got a much stronger mayor, and they run it more top-down, that if Nashville needs something, the city does it on its own.
Meaning
and they've got the
city council
do
it. Does it? Or
the city council
it's a
and mayor.
Thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So when River City Development wants to do a thing, is it a council of appointees that just decide, or is it not a council, or does one guy decide? How does it work?
If River City Properties has an idea, they present it, of course, to the city planners and the city fathers, and eventually it goes through the council and the mayor's office. But they are sort of it is the dog wagging the tail or the tail wagging the dog. And in this case, if you consider the dog the city council, which I do, we don't have a good one, the tail is River City Development Corporation, and they do.
Now, very very quickly, you mentioned another public-private partnership, which was the people that provide you with cable.
Oh,
that
yeah.
ran Comcast out of town. So this is a public-private partnership that literally ran a for-profit business out of town.
Exactly.
In the heart of Republican Eastern Tennessee. This is what I find fascinating.
The Electric Power Board was founded right when power was first brought to the Valley in the turn of the last century. And it, they put up the poles, they did the rest of it, but they were a, public-private corporation working for the city. And they have lately, they do a good job of providing power. They buy it from TVA, distribute it to the community.
This is why you said thank you to the taxpayers for subsidizing your...
And I do. TVA, we've got the lowest power rates in the country thanks to TVA, which is subsidized by the U.S. taxpayers.
It is literally...
And I do appreciate it.
And it is literally listed as a federal corporate enterprise.
It's
owned as a corporation by the federal government of the United States. Think about that. And we can't have socialism in this country. Bernie Sanders is crazy. We are already socialist. I mean, we've got, what is it? It's the government owning, it's the government controlling the means of production. They don't even have to own it to be socialist.
Exactly.
You know, and people think you have to have a parliament and a prime minister to be socialist. My impression is we've been socialist, at least in intention, since the 1930s.
Oh, without a doubt. And you can go back really to the first Roosevelt when progressivism
Republican.
Another Republican, which brought a lot more business and into government. In the sense that, as opposed to by the people for the people, it is sort of like let's bring the people along, and
they don't know what's good for them.
They don't know what's
good
for them. Exactly.
And you actually now this power company that is
EPB,
they got into
the cable side of it, and we've got gig speed, and I don't know what everybody else pays for their internet access, but I've got a gig for $63 a month. And that's a whole lot of bandwidth for not much money.
Well, and the problem is, you know, Comcast still has such terrible customer service. And I'm talking about the consumer side. I know the business side of Comcast is completely different.
Correct.
But the consumer side is, if you want to lower your bill, you're wading into a morass, a quicksand of nonsense. And so you just get your 1 gig, you know, super fast internet, and life is good.
And the point being that they are basically using the city-owned power grid to distribute their cable services, and are able to probably be price competitive, more than price competitive with Comcast. And I will say that they were smart enough to deliver terrific customer service as well.
Okay.
Something else you don't get. So
Not from Comcast, or at least that's the history. I think Comcast is getting better, but I think that when got into internet, I'd like them to be a sponsor, but when they got into internet was at the peak of Comcast's issues. And now I think it helped for Comcast to buy NBC, to be quite honest with you, but I don't know how. I don't want to get into
that. That's another podcast.
You know, we mentioned angle of attack indicators. You said to me, hey, how's your angle of attack indicator guy? Because you are also, in addition to being an analyst and celebrated author, you're also a pilot. And you said, how's that AOA thing going? And I said, well, he's doing pretty good. He's going to the air show, and he'll be in Building 3 at the air show, the EAA air show, and he will be 6 deep with people, including Harrison Ford, came up to the booth at, I think it was last year.
Harrison needs this.
Well, Harrison had an accident directly related to angle of attack problems that he did not have one. So he was very interested in it, and Mark will stand there for 8 hours and just hold forth along with all the other guys on the team, talking to people about how it works. What is it? Well, if you are a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. So what is it? It's a visual indicator above the sight line, so it's above the dashboard and all the avionics. It's not in the avionics. It sits above your line of sight. So when you're making a final turn to land, they call that the base turn, yeah?
Correct.
You're looking around the plane trying to figure out where you're going to go. You're looking for other traffic, as you correctly pointed out, that you don't want to hit somebody. You're coming around, and you don't have time to look and find your angle of attack indicator on the dashboard, right? Or whatever they call that.
Instrument panel is what us aviators call it.
But there you go.
Yeah, dashboard.
I knew there was a name for it.
There.
And this thing gives you an indicator of how much lift your wing is producing so that you don't have it. The number one cause of death in civil aviation is, of course, this problem where they
stall
turn.
Span accidents.
There you go.
And most of them are turning base to final. So there you go.
And this saves lives. So go to the air show, check these guys out, or click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Okay, so let's talk about marijuana.
Sure.
As long as we're talking about flying, let's talk about marijuana.
Hot grass, dope, marijuana, it's all the same. You smoke it, you get high.
So what were we talking about today at lunch? We're talking about marijuana, and Illinois has just legalized recreational marijuana. This is I believe it is a massive step for marijuana, whether you like it or not. because Illinois is one of those really cornerstone states, that, and I don't think California has even gone that far. I think California is
California
still
is recreational now.
Oh, it is.
And I believe Illinois is either the eighth or ninth state to legalize it recreationally. And it is something that the federal government is going to have to take it up. It's apparently a political hot button.
Why?
And I don't know why.
What voter is against marijuana? Not that I am for it. I don't. My drug days are over, and I've consumed my lifetime allotment, so it's not an issue. But why would I can't? Everyone in this country, I cannot believe that. I'll bet you 87% of the people in this country have smoked pot.
And I would say that that's a pretty good made-up statistic.
Oh, here they come.
And what I'm saying is that I'm not sure that if they legalized it federally and left it up to the states, because there may be some states, you know your voting blocks, and we can tell in the last abortion issues that have coming up.
Oh, you said abortion. Oh.
You've got a lot of, well, yeah, just put that in the banner. That'll be clickbait. But anyway, in terms of marijuana, when you look at it, there are very few people that use marijuana that cannot get all they want at a reasonable price, like any consumer good.
Oh, I know what we were talking about. We were talking about the guys that now... So they Humboldt County, California.
Yes.
So they started out as commune in the communes, and they couldn't live on the commune because they didn't know how to farm, which is, you know, not that easy. And so they sent one of their guys to Afghanistan to bring back seeds because it was with the same climate band as Humboldt County. And that's the Humboldt County marijuana that is generally sold. Most of those guys were selling it illegally, which meant they weren't paying taxes, and they didn't have FICA and Social Security, and they didn't have business regulations or OSHA to deal with. Now that they're commercial businesses, it's a different story. So there's a big thing in Humboldt County about the they're still illegal growing on because they don't want to deal with regulations. I think that's interesting. And I think it's interesting as an industry, because in Oregon, they're already saying there's too much marijuana. We're growing too much marijuana.
I hope that was off mic. So, and the thing about it is, if you go back to moonshiners, it's not that you couldn't get whiskey, but moonshiners didn't pay taxes. It was always the revenue
agent
came after.
That's right.
And in marijuana, it's the same thing, because now that it's become part of the tax base, it's even more profitable for states to go after the non-revenue marijuana.
And you mentioned to
and
me
have a tax stamp
that
on it.
Kentucky, it's still the number one product of the state of Kentucky.
Cash crop in Kentucky. And,
oh, cash crop. Okay.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And you had an interesting story about that.
I mean, just one of those asides, but driving on a Jeep trip through the Daniel Boone National Forest and going up through the Jeep trails
in the Daniel Boone National Forest,
in the forest itself.
Huh? Well, see, that's where you grow pot, on the federal land.
Exactly.
Honest to God, because they don't look on the federal land. Well, no. They may now. Don't tell anyone.
Don't tell anyone. Yeah, this guy may come after me. But yeah, we had stopped at a little clearing, thought this would be a nice place to camp, and just out of nowhere, this guy comes up on a horse, and he's friendly enough, just, hey, how are you? And it's a matter that, hey, what you doing? We're just going through here. We're on a Jeep trip. And I notice on the horse, he's got a scabbard, and in the scabbard is an AR-15 or an M16, I don't know. Just in the scabbard, not threatening any more than anything else. And he's all nice and all the rest of it. And we said, I think we'll be moving on. And he said, y'all be real careful.
Yeah, y'all be real careful. So then you get into town and you go to a little diner.
Yeah. And get to a little diner, just popping out in just a one diner, one gas pump town. Everybody in that town, when we walked in the diner, knew who we were and why we were there. And it's just like, just keep moving on,
right,
folks.
And that was the segue into, if you really want to live free, then you have to think about, you really, because here in any town, like any cosmopolitan city, you have this issue with public-private partnerships and control where they create, you know, hey, we're going to go down and tonight. You and I are going to go have dinner in a real Tony place, and we're going to drink coffee, and you're going to have a drink. And,
I might.
And we're going to, you know, there are going to be women with tattoos and the hippies and
out on the street.
And,
yes,
and craft whiskey, and people will be playing music on the corner and everything else. And there are 6,000 some units of condominiums being built down there. Same thing in Minneapolis. They're doing the same thing, and it's this. People are just they just rave about the downtown area. It's fabulous. And I remember when the downtown area you couldn't go in, and look what they've done here. Well, it's an enormous amount of money. Aside from the fact that it's misallocation of taxpayer assets, because we don't know where that money would have gone. And when you look at the overall GDP, and you're looking at moribund GDP growth, so at 2.1% or 2% GDP growth, no matter what you do, maybe we're misallocating resources. Maybe the resources that would have gone into providing cable to all the people of Chattanooga would have gone into an electric car company or something here, or, you know, a self-driving, I don't know, you know, make up something. So it's really interesting, and I think the segue was that we decided that if you really wanted to be free, the thing to do is to go into one of these small towns in Kentucky. And I mean, there's some pretty awesome small towns in the Blue Ridge Mountains that I've just come through, all through Kentucky, down around Pikeville on the West Virginia border and the Ohio border up north, and the Virginia border to the southeast. Beautiful towns up in the mountains. So you go in there on the DL, you do your thing, and I'm not saying you do marijuana, but you do your thing, and you're a good citizen, and you keep your nose clean. Technically speaking, you don't tell people what you're doing. You're off the grid, essentially off the radar, and you don't feel the long arm of government unless it's simply some silly thing. If you don't do something stupid, you're free to pursue happiness.
Absolutely,
which we're
true.
All supposed to be guaranteed to do.
Exactly.
And they've decided, well, we're going to build this beautiful city for you so that you can pursue happiness. And for me, it's, I would like to pursue happiness with zero tax. I don't want to pay for your idea of what my happiness is going to be.
Because that's the thing. If you live, work, and play in this town, we can say it's a beautiful town, but we are paying for the privilege to do that. We're paying for
it. We don't realize
taxes,
how much we're paying for that.
In hospitality taxes, in all the rest of it. So we are paying for the privilege of having nice things, but they are the nice things somebody else chose. We either use them or not.
Well, there's a social pressure to support them because somebody thought it was a great idea and that we all are doing this together. Again, this is what I would refer to nothing more than American socialism that everyone seems to support. And by the way, we're in the heart of republicanism in this country. And this is where I want to get to the mood of the state of Tennessee. So you mentioned to me that you had a UAW vote at the Volkswagen plant. We're in what people consider to be the heart of mouth-breathing conservatism, people with no teeth, Confederate flags everywhere, and, you know, don't tread on me, and these are Republicans. And here we are supporting public-private partnerships along with, you know, having Republican coffees and supporting Republican candidates.
Exactly. And that's something that we've... Tennessee's been blessed with a series of good governors, both Republican and Democrat. And the 2016, one of the ex-Democrat governors ran for U.S. Senate. And a good, honest man, the rest of it, the Republican candidate, not as well known.
Marsha Blackburn.
And it's just a matter, and not only that, but she was a horrible candidate.
Well, she was a U.S. congressman,
she
ran
was,
for the Senate,
and she was a horrible congressman too.
Why was she horrible?
She is petty and venal.
Okay,
and
boy, that's unusual. I can't imagine
a
president like that.
And
meanwhile, no. The Republicans are supporting the velvet steel hand of government in the form of public-private partnerships.
And the thing is, it wasn't even close, and it's only because she had an R next to her name, not because she was a great
candidate. She won by what, 17 points or 7 points?
It was 7, 8 points, which is a lot.
That's a good margin in a Senate election, statewide election. So
exactly.
Did her votes come from here, or did they come from Nashville and parts west?
Frankly, Memphis, they're basically, East Tennessee is Knoxville and Chattanooga. They're an hour and a half apart from each other, strictly red, very red part of the state. Nashville's a mixed bag. It is kind of purple just because there's been a lot of influence from away.
Some northerners moved in.
And Memphis has always been a heavily urban area and has always been very much blue.
Well, there's a lot of black people who vote Democrat in Memphis.
And that's exactly why.
And as you said today, Democrats have run Memphis for, what did you say, 40, 30 years?
40 years or more. And frankly...
Into the ground.
It is, no, yes, yes, into the ground. It is not a pleasant spot. They still are living on Beale Street and Elvis, but in terms of...
I went there 2 years ago, Anna, as I told you
today. Did you feel safe and secure and enjoy
I wanted to park the truck right in front of the place that I went to eat because I wanted to keep an eye on it. You know, because I have everything in the truck that I need. So, you know, it's not something I want to leave on a side street. Well, I had to park it on a side street. And I actually got up during lunch and said, I'll be right back, and went and checked on it and came back. So it was a good block and a half walk to check on it because I just did not feel... And it was very nice. That part of that Beale Street area was nice, but it's like nothing like Chattanooga.
No, it is. It is not... They have a lot of issues in Memphis, and that's Memphis's issues. Most of Tennessee would be happy to give Shelby County and Memphis to Arkansas, Arkansas doesn't want it.
South Dakota, for example, is very moderate Republican, but pure red on the eastern side, I think, of the Platte River. It's very much Mountain West and Libertarian, and thus somewhat purple and strange to the west of the Platte River. So Tennessee is the exact reverse of that. Eastern Tennessee, very red, but moderate. Not necessarily fire-breathing. I don't know that there is any fire. I would say very much these days I'm starting to look at Republicans as this sort of progressive Democrat light party with few exceptions, except for the populists.
And that's something our congresspeople, I mean, in East Tennessee, Desjarlais and Chuck Fleischman.
Oh, Desjarlais.
Are both came from the Tea Party bent, and they both toe a very conservative line publicly and their voting records. But so on that side of it, our representation is almost as fire-breathing as you're going to get in Congress these days, because nobody wants to annoy anybody. But
they're not libertarian. I guess I want to say that.
Not even close.
They're not about freedom. They're about let us run things because we'll do a better job. And maybe they do. I don't know. Maybe they should give them Memphis.
let's give them Memphis.
Get them out of here. Yeah. Oh, my God. And there was one more thing that we talked about very quickly. So then where do you think, as people sort of start preparing to think about, and please don't mention any candidate names because I'm not doing that, but part of this road trip is to try to assess where we are. You know, I didn't see any Trump signs in the fields coming out here, but then I did mention a candidate, sorry. I didn't see any Bernie Sanders signs or anything like that because we're a little far out yet for the election, but I did in 2015, I did see a lot of that when I was out here.
Exactly, and as the election gears up, I don't know what it's going to look like here. There's no doubt that Tennessee will be a very red state, and is going to support Trump no matter which of the clown car of Democrat candidates, whoever emerges from it as the victor, is not going to appeal to the good people of Tennessee.
I can't think of a metaphor. Is there a sports metaphor? It's like a team with like a huge bench. It's like an entire baseball team. Exactly. You can't know who do they have. They should give them all numbers with jerseys.
That would be nice. And if they put the sponsors on them, that'd be great too. So more like NASCAR, because that way we can identify.
Right.
Perfect.
All right. Well, it's been great sitting here in Mobile Podcast Command as the evening wears on. Where are we going to go eat?
I don't know. Are you feeling like a steak?
I'm always feeling like a steak.
I'm feeling like Hennessy.
Ain't no vegans in this truck.
Well, that's good to know. I'm thinking we may go down to Hennen's.
Sounds
and
good.
It'll give you a chance to enjoy our downtown too, as anyone should, you know, visit Chattanooga.
Especially since you paid for it.
Exactly.
Thanks for listening to podcast 841 On the Road. Thank you, Relia Fund at reliafund.com for sponsoring these travel podcasts at thebobdavispodcasts.com.
Back to life, back to reality, back to